Broadcasting to New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Sydney, London, and around the world, this is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live on this Monday, 101.3 KPCG, online at kpcg.fm. Coming up on today's program, a look at a few important stories from the headlines, including one sent in by a listener that shows that fasting, of all things, might be good for you. That's what science has finally come around to discover. Also, we'll take a look at thetrumpet.com, some of the programming today here on KPCG, and a great book you need to check out, Russia and China in Prophecy. That and more this edition of Trumpet Radio Live.
This is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here today on Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG. Online, we are at kpcg.fm and have a live link at thetrumpet.com as well. Lots of listeners around the world. We appreciate you tuning in, mostly via the internet and, of course, some locally over the air here in Edmond, Oklahoma City area. Dwight Falk with you here today. Grant Turgeon should be back tomorrow. And so lots to talk about on today's program. Had a great weekend. Hopefully everyone did. Beautiful weather here locally. Fall weather in the low 70s. Very cool and comfortable. Had a nice cold front come through Saturday night. A little bit of rain, some thunder and lightning, but nothing too severe as far as I know. But cool and comfortable weather now. So hopefully it's nice where you're listening. Also, seems like there's lots of parts of the earth that are having different difficulties with weather from time to time. So hopefully it's good where you are. We talked last week a little bit about the aftermath of what's happening there in some areas where the hurricanes came through, Hurricane Maria. And this is a story about that from the Miami Herald. It says, on the streets of San Juan, police struggle to rein in crime after Hurricane Maria. This is an interesting note to the destruction that came through because of the weather. Now they're dealing with humans, which a lot of times are more destructive. It says, more than a month after Hurricane Maria wrecked the island, Puerto Rico's overwhelmed police force of 13,000 officers is struggling to contain crime just as before. So it's not like it was great before the hurricane. But now, after the hurricane, they're dealing with longer shifts against emboldened criminals and on streets cloaked in darkness. The power is out there, of course, I think as many of you realize, and is making the criminals more emboldened, and they're going around committing more and more crimes. It says it's easier to burglarize. There's no alarms, no phone systems. It's dark. The delinquents are taking advantage of the crisis that Puerto Rico is in. That's according to Puerto Rico police officer Herberto Soto. He said that during a night patrol Tuesday. That patrol included a call for a robbery shooting, homeless men torching the outsides of stolen cables. They wanted to steal the copper from inside. And a high-speed car chase of a suspected gunman. That was the Tuesday evening of Officer Herberto Soto. So he's dealing with some of those things. The police force is dealing with a lot of problems. 13,000 police officers, but not enough to deal with all the crime. They say the future for law enforcement on the island is bleak. The department has lost about 4,000 officers in the past 5 years, and because of the island's economic crisis, they cannot count on fresh recruits anytime soon. Don't have the money to pay them. Hundreds of U.S. Army soldiers, outside law enforcement officers and private security guards are helping temporarily, but robberies, murders, and drug dealing have resumed at levels that would seem outrageous in mainland states but are tragically normal in Puerto Rico. And now the problem is exacerbated because of the lack of power and destruction after the hurricane. It's the thing that the criminals never take time off, do they? They don't stop their crimes because of destruction. They're not trying to help. They're just continuing to be criminals. In the month since Maria ravaged the island, there have been no fewer than 34 murders. So I don't know that they even have an official death toll yet due to the hurricane, But since the hurricane, they've had at least 34 murders because of the criminals. So really a bad situation there in Puerto Rico. And I think it does show, too, how essential a respected and properly equipped a police force is. They need enough people. You just imagine how bad it would get in a major U.S. city if power was out for an extended period and the police couldn't keep control. I guess the police do a pretty good job of keeping control as best they can, but even there, there's a lot of crime in different cities. And just imagine if it you know, something like this happened where you had a natural disaster of some kind or something happened and the normal power was out, the electricity was out, and your alarm systems didn't work and your communication systems didn't work. What would happen to those cities? You hate to think about it. There's a lot at thetrumpet.com. You can read books and booklets and articles that cover some of what the Bible says is going to happen to some of those major cities. And it's not a good picture. And I think we get a little small taste maybe of that, a little look into that, if you see what's going on down there in San Juan right now. So that's from the Miami Herald. Here's another headline that's interesting. I don't think will be surprising. The Pew Research Center says that in polarized era, fewer Americans hold a mix of conservative and liberal views. People are sort of being forced into very extreme camps, where, as the research shows, in the past, people had sort of a mix of views. They might like a little bit of the conservative side of things, maybe a little bit of the liberal side, but it's a very polarized era, as the Pew Research Center shows, and so people are, for the most part, going to one camp or the other. Not a lot of agreement there in the middle. The median Republican, they say, is now more conservative than 97% of Democrats. And the median Democrat is more liberal than 95% of Republicans. By comparison, in 1994, which isn't that long ago, there was substantially more overlap between the two partisan groups than there is today. Just 64% of Republicans were to the right of the median Democrat, while 70% of Democrats were to the left of the median Republican in 1994. Put differently, 23% of Republicans were more liberal than the median Democrat in 1994, while 17% of Democrats were more conservative than the median Republican. Which is funny, I didn't think that could that could happen, but I guess it used to be that way. Today, those numbers are just 1% and 3% respectively. So people are being forced into one side or the other, it seems like. And, I mean, if you just check your news every day, obviously, a lot of sites will be very liberal, some will be more conservative. And that's kind of the stories they go after and the way they present things. And so people are really being pushed into those camps, not to mention the nightly news shows and things like that, the talk shows. Very, very much polarized. And so that's some new research there from the Pew Research Center. Pretty amazing. Disunified as well. So not a good situation, I don't think. Plus, how can the government work together if they're so, you know, if their base is so much in disagreement? It's hard to find any sort of common ground. This is the top story here from thetrumpet.com today. Iraq seizes Kurdish territory after independence referendum. The United States is silent, but Iran is ready to fill the void, this article says. And that area there, that Kurdish territory, has lots of oil production. And so that's a strategic region. It's important in a lot of ways for Iraq, but for Iran too. And so make sure you read that article. It gets into a lot of the details of what's happening over there so you can understand what's going on. There's I'm sure news on it, but it's not in the top main stories of most of the normal websites. It seems like everything is the political talk and the very polarized political talk here in the U.S. But there are big events happening in other places. So thetrumpet.com focuses on a lot of those more important headlines. Iraq seizes Kurdish territory after independence referendum. Check that out. Also related to that, is the Middle East ready for an independent Kurdistan? And The King of the South, which is a really important booklet that you need to get at thetrumpet.com, talking about what Iran is going to do, what they have been doing, and there's a lot of good recent history there to show the direction they're heading. So that's at thetrumpet.com today. Make sure you stop and check that out. Also, the Trumpet Daily Radio Show with your host, Stephen Fleury. That's coming your way here in just a bit on KPCG. If you can't catch it live, 7 a.m., or at one of the replays throughout the day, you can download the archive version at kpcg.fm and at thetrumpet.com. You can get the program at those locations. Lots of topics today, with the main one, I suppose, would be the rise of the final resurrection of the Holy Roman Empire. A lot happening in Europe and in Germany. A lot of political upheaval. One of the Trumpet briefs from last week from Trumpet editor-in-chief Gerald Fleury talked about German politics and what's going on over there, how it is really being turned on its head in a lot of ways. So make sure that you do get those Trumpet briefs. Those are free. You can get those at thetrumpet.com. And listen for this Trumpet Daily Radio Show today from your host, Stephen Fleury, comes from Edstone, England, on the rise of the final resurrection of the Holy Roman Empire. A lot to look at there in Europe. This is a really interesting note that was sent in from a listener. By the way, if you'd like to email us, you can do that. Send your emails to comments@kpcg.fm, and we're happy to look at those. We get some nice comments from time to time, occasionally one that's not so nice, but usually pretty nice. We'll take them all. We'll take whatever you want to send our way. And some good stories that come along, too, and this is one of those. It's from CNBC.com. It says, latest science says if you want a longer life, don't just eat less often. That's there's always new diets and new exercise programs and things that people are getting into to try to improve their health. While the numbers continue to show that we are, as a nation, heavier than we've been. And so it's sort of two sides of the teeter-totter there, I guess. Lots of extremes on one side or the other. And so science is finally coming around to say something the Bible has said for years, that maybe fasting is good for you on occasion. This is Dr. Walter Longo, director of the USC Longevity Institute, and his colleagues explore the fundamental mechanisms of aging, and they looked at it in yeast, mice, and humans. Their work on periodic fasting is still in its early days, but holds promise for new ways to fight diseases. So they're looking at not just weight control, but fighting diseases, and a lot of times those two things go hand in hand. It says people have been losing weight by counting calories for years, but some recent medical studies are trying to prove that if you want the ultimate benefit of better dietary habits, less disease, and a longer life, your body may need to think you're eating less often too. Longevity scientists are studying food fasting to find out if regular periods of going without any food or making your body think you are going without food could be a key to lengthening the human lifespan. So they're wanting people to sort of trick themselves into thinking they're not eating. I don't know. It seems like it'd be easier just to not eat for a little bit, but they have their way of doing it. They say when you consume calories also plays a role. That's according to Sebastian Brandhorst, data analyst at the Longevity Institute, based at the University of Southern California, who is involved in pioneering studies with what is called the fast-mimicking diet, FMD for short, a way to eat that tricks the body into thinking a person is fasting. So, it seems like maybe just fasting would work better without having to trick anybody. But they say backers of the research say the results are encouraging under the direction of the Longevity Institute. A fasting diet has been tested on yeast, rodents, and on a small group of humans. The effects produced lead researchers to argue for larger clinical trials in humans. Longo also has launched a for-profit startup business, L Nutra, to sell the fasting diet to the public. Isn't that amazing? You could sell a fasting diet. If you look at fasting, there's nothing to buy there because you don't eat anything. But they have a different way, I think, they're trying to do it. So there's lots to, I guess, think about there. But it is interesting that science is coming around to say, well, you know, if fasting on occasion might actually be good for you. And the Bible talks about that and has for many, many years. One passage you could look at if you're interested is Matthew 6 and verse 16. Christ talking there, giving some examples of how a Christian should conduct their lives. And he says, moreover, when you fast, and so he doesn't say if you feel like it or if you tricked yourself into it. He just says, when you fast, so it should be done. And then he goes on to explain the way to carry on with that. And of course, in a lot of cases, the Bible's talking about the spiritual benefit of fasting, but there's also physical benefit as well. And again, people have to be careful on how they do that and use wisdom and not be extreme and so forth. But it is a biblical principle that fasting is good and it can produce good results in lots of ways, especially if it's done correctly. So even though science isn't completely on board with it, at least according to this article, they're trying to do it maybe in a different way. They are realizing that it does help the body at times to have a little bit of a break. So pretty interesting there. They finally have figured it out. And I'm amazed that they're trying to sell the fasting diet to the public. I don't know what you would sell there exactly. Empty bottles? Containers with nothing in them? I'm not sure, but they're looking into it. But you can find a lot of great information about fasting by looking it up in the Bible. Lots of good passages there. Here's an interesting note on this day in history. 1929 on this day. Not a good note, but one that's interesting, something to think about. In the U.S., 1929, the Dow Jones Industrial Average plunged, starting the stock market crash that began the Great Depression, and that just kept rolling and snowballing into a full-fledged financial disaster. Then on October 24th, 1929, as nervous investors began selling overpriced shares en masse, the stock market crash that some had feared finally happened at last. A record 12.9 million shares were traded that day, known as Black Thursday. 5 days later, on October 29th, or Black Tuesday as it was known, is known, some 16 million shares were traded. After another wave of panic swept Wall Street, millions of shares ended up worthless. And those investors who had bought stocks on margin or with borrowed money were wiped out completely. And so if you look at the stock market today, it's gaining like never before. It's just plowing right ahead. And there's a lot of voices out there that always say it can't last. It's inflated. But I guess most hope that would have some sort of moderating without being a full-fledged depression of sorts. But boy, you just look at the economy in general and you can always find a few positive indicators, I guess. But you look at the debt, the national debt, you look at the individual debt, on average, the American, an American, I guess, whether it's household or individual, it might be household, I'm not sure, has over $16,000 in credit card debt, not to mention, you know, mortgages and auto loans and so on and so forth. It's pretty amazing. Yet the stock market keeps going up. But if we look at history, there was that time when it did crash and it caused a lot of problems, especially for people that were doing it with borrowed money or were involved with borrowed money. As consumer confidence vanished in the wake of the stock market crash back there in 1929, the downturn in spending and investment led factories and other businesses to slow down production and begin firing their workers. And for those who were lucky enough to remain employed, the wages fell and buying power decreased. It's all a bunch of dominoes, really. Many Americans forced to buy on credit fell into debt, and the number of foreclosures and repossessions climbed steadily. The global adherence to the gold standard, which joined countries around the world in a fixed currency exchange, helped spread economic woes from the United States throughout the world, especially Europe. There's lots of, you know, the stories, I think everybody knows them, from the Depression in the U.S., also from the problems in Germany, the infamous wheelbarrow full of Deutschmarks, I guess, or whatever they were using at the time. I think it was that. But trying to buy, I think maybe it was Weimar dollars, trying to buy, you know, a loaf of bread, and then the problems in the U.S. and all kinds of things. So it can get pretty bad pretty quickly, and interesting to look at that history. There is a headline from thetrumpet.com you might want to look at. It's a headline from another source, but it's featured there at thetrumpet.com. It's from Project Syndicate from October 11th, and the title is "The Demise of Dollar Diplomacy?" So the U.S. is able to kind of run this, it's a pretty artificial economy in a lot of ways, because of the dollar being a global currency, the global currency. But if that changes, as a lot of people think it will, and the Bible shows that it will, then there's a problem with the economy in the U.S. And So and not something we love to think about, but certainly something that you have to pay attention to. And so check that out at thetrumpet.com, The Demise of Dollar Diplomacy. There's a lot of other good write-ups there, too, as well. Some great books and booklets about just finance and just helpful hints along the way to help everybody get into a better financial spot. But it's just interesting to look at this day, 1929, in the U.S., the Dow Jones Industrial Average plunged, starting the stock market crash that began the Great Depression. But a good note, a positive note here. You're probably familiar with Richard Branson. He's made a lot of money over the years. I think he started, I forget, over 8 companies that made $1 billion or something like that. And he said, if I lost everything and had to start over, here's what I would do. So he's good at making money. And he said, if he had to start all over, here's what he would do. And he talks about starting up a business. But here's an interesting point about that. It says the billionaire credits much of his success to the simple habit of jotting down ideas. He says some of Virgin's most successful companies have been born from random moments. If we hadn't opened our notebooks, they would never have happened. He writes that on his LinkedIn account. And so pretty interesting. It's not a bad idea to carry around a notebook. Or I guess maybe today, just put it on your phone or whatever people use. But a notebook's a good idea. And jot down ideas. And I'm sure they're not all good ones, even from somebody like Richard Branson. But there were some that were pretty good. And like he said, some that he kind of thought about and then moved on and then later went back and found them and ended up being quite successful for him. So that's one thing I think everybody could do if they wanted to. Carry a notebook around, jot down your ideas, because sometimes it's the billion-dollar idea, I guess, according to Richard Branson anyway. So that's a more of a positive note there at the end on looking at the history of the Great Depression. Thanks for joining us today on Trumpet Radio Live here on 101.3 KPCG. Online at kpcg.fm, live link at thetrumpet.com as well. And if you'd like to follow us on Twitter, you can do that at kpcgfm. And join that growing number that likes to see what programming we have coming out. Also, again, if you'd like to email us, please do that. Comments at kpcg.fm. Any comments are welcome, and sometimes some good stories come along, too. And we appreciate those. Some of the things coming up today, besides this program, Trumpet Radio Live, of course, the Key of David program, Trumpet Daily Radio Show, as we mentioned, a new episode of Just the Best Literature, your host, Dennis Leap, talking a fair bit about the history of the Bible. Some really good information there. And there he's doing is we can get Bibles just about anywhere today. And it wasn't always that way. It was difficult to have them and could be a real life and death struggle to have them anywhere. So it's good history to remember. He talks about that on Just the Best Literature. You can listen to that later today. Also, it'll be posted online too, so you can download and listen there. A lot of people like to do that. Watch Jerusalem Today with Brent Noctegal from Jerusalem, and that's a new program. Also, Music for Life with your host Ryan Malone coming up today as well. Lots of great programming here on KPCG, and you can get it all online too at kpcg.fm and download it and listen to it on the device of your choice if you'd like to do that. There's a really important book that's at thetrumpet.com. It's been updated. It's been there for, we've had it for quite a while, but it's been updated recently. And it is Russia and China in Prophecy. A lot happening in that part of the world. And Russia's been in the news a lot lately. I guess not as much recently other than Vladimir Putin and President Trump. But they're doing a lot militarily in a lot of other areas as well. And then, of course, China is very busy. They were very busy last week as their government session got into session, and quite a few news stories about what was going on over there, what is going on over there. A lot of them at thetrumpet.com you can find. But Russia and China in Prophecy, really important book that you need to look at, and it's new and it's updated. It says this: America's status as the world's lone superpower is rapidly fading. I don't think anybody could dispute that today, even people in the United States. Says other nations and groups of nations are angling to fill the void. Rising in the East is an emerging power bloc of tremendous potential in manpower, economic heft, and military might. Its growing presence is intensifying global competition for resources and for geopolitical influence. Where will this trend lead? You can know Bible prophecy provides a remarkable penetrating view of Asia's future. So that's the synopsis for this book. Today we're going to take a look at some of the highlights of the first chapter, The Emerging Asian Superpower. And if you go through this chapter, there's a lot of very good history in there, showing where the Russia and Chinese power block, where those people have come from, and other nations involved in that block, where they've come from, what their history is, and all the way up through their modern history. So it's good to look at all of that in light of then where things are leading. This it says, referring to Ezekiel 38 and verse 2, Mr. Armstrong said, "There is general agreement among students of prophecy that Gog, in the land of Magog, that's G-O-G, is the vast regions of northern Eurasia, extending from the Baltic to the Pacific. Meshech is Moscow and Tubal is Tobolsk. The Bible margin says Prince of Rosh, which is Russia." And that was written in the Plain Truth magazine, April 1981. And so to understand Bible prophecy, you have to be able to know the modern identity of the ancient names used. Very rarely is it the exact same name as it is today. Most cases, it's a different name. But you can put together the pieces of the puzzle and find out who it's talking about. But in this case, a lot of these names are pretty similar. Meshech and Moscow is not that different. Tubal and Tobolsk is not that different. So you could even extrapolate it just based upon the way the names sound. But so it goes through a lot of that history. We don't have time to cover all of that. But you need to look at that and really prove out, okay, what are these names? And then who do they relate to today in that region? And this book, Russia and China and Prophecy, says in the first chapter, "At the same time, understanding the history of these peoples will help us identify certain character traits that resurface even in modern times." And there is a real truth to that. Different peoples have certain characteristics that do tend to, you know, come up again over time. Even though a lot of people, I think, would say we're in sort of this, I don't know, postmodern era where, you know, the history doesn't have a lot of impact on today. That's not true, of course. You can look at the way a nation or a group of people have acted throughout their history, and it's a good indication of how they'll act in the future. The idea that that changes is not one that's proven historically, that they usually repeat the same things that they've done in the past. So it's important to know about the history of these peoples in this Russia-China power block over in that part of the world. For decades, it says both Russia and China have had their eyes fixed on conquering Middle Asia, Indochina, and Southeast Asia. Their ultimate goal, according to Mr. Armstrong, is not just frontier expansion, but global control. So he wrote a lot of that many years ago, and there's no doubt that's the case, especially today. Here's a headline even from today itself, from Foreign Times, Financial Times, rather, sorry, Financial Times. It says, "An assertive China challenges the West." That's their headline. "An assertive China challenges the West." And here's a little bit of what they wrote. "Beijing is gaining confidence that it can mix political control with growth and innovation. They're not interested in democracy, but they are interested in dominating the world." They say many Chinese intellectuals still look to the West as a model of political freedom, but as one liberal academic put it to me last week, the author says, "It's a real problem for us inside China that the West is looking so weak." And so, again, some of these liberal academics, and I don't know that they have a lot of sway in China, but they were looking at the U.S. as sort of this model of stability politically. But as they say, look, there's a problem now that the West is looking so weak. They're seeing that. They are seeing that the West is looking weak. We're not just looking weak, and we are weak. You can look at things as simple as, you know, people being confused, but people having different opinions on whether you should stand or not during the national anthem before a football game. That's something that's a very public offering for the world. They're trying to even take, say, the NFL and make it a global sort of sports league, as they've tried to do with the NBA and other things, and reach out into China and reach out into London in particular, into England there with the NFL. And then we show up, our teams show up and make a mockery of the United States. Some do anyway. So people can see very clearly. They can just check the headlines every day on the major news sites and see the weakness in the United States. And that's they're recognizing it, and they know that they have an opportunity to gain strength and power here because the U.S. is not strong like it used to be. Continuing with his Financial Times article, it says, rather than moving towards democracy, China is increasingly restricting political freedom. With crackdowns on dissidents and human rights lawyers, tighter controls on the media, and official campaigns against Western influence and ideas, the American internet groups Google, Facebook, and Twitter remain excluded from China, blocked by the Great Firewall. I like that term, take off on the Great Wall. It used to be conventional wisdom in the West that China would pay a heavy economic price for restricting freedom of expression, and that this price would only rise as China attempted to move away from low-cost manufacturing towards a knowledge economy. But China is increasingly confident that it can combine tight political control with continued rapid economic growth and technological innovation. The economy is growing at 6.9% a year, which is pretty good. They say impressive for a middle-income economy that is now, depending on how you look at it, the unit of measurement, either the largest or the second largest in the world. They are growing economically. They do own a fair bit of the U.S. debt as well. And they realize that the model for politics in the United States isn't working. And there's too much weakness in it. And so they're actually tightening their grip, which is a really just interesting sort of side point that, you know, one of the criticisms that the U.S. has had of China over the years is their human rights record. But yet, because of our quote-unquote freedom over here and it being abused and misused in a lot of ways, other nations are looking at it and saying, like China, and saying, you know, we need to actually crack down and be more strict here in our country so that we don't have a U.S. type, you know, infighting occur. So for all of our attempts to bring democracy to China, China's looking at the democracy and saying that's weakness because we're not doing it right. It has been a strength for a time, but then again, when people stop having a private morality to empower them to have a proper democracy, well, then it falls apart, as the founding fathers, you know, warned that it would, and of course the Bible warns that it will. You can't live a lawless lifestyle and expect things to work. And so China's looking at that and saying, look, we're going to get even tighter, even more control over our people. And that's the way they're going now. So that's just kind of an interesting aside. But they definitely are growing in confidence in China. And as it says here, the headline, an assertive China challenges the West. They have a global ambition. Mr. Armstrong talked about that years ago. The Trumpet continues to talk about that today. And you read it in your headlines from today even. And Russia, China, and Prophecy, again, it says reality dictates that achieving such a goal is only possible if the two countries cooperate. That would be Russia and China. They need each other to have this global takeover. The December 1959 Plain Truth revealed some of their plans, including Russia and China's goal to form a coalition. It said Russia's program is not to take Europe and to attack the United States first. The communist program, which our leaders should know, calls first for the seizure of Asia. Lenin wrote that the way to Paris, London, and New York is via Beijing and Delhi. And that was in 1959. And so there's been a lot that's happened since 1959, obviously, but you can still see that the underlying principle here of a cooperation, a unity between Russia and China is very much in the works. And they are doing that quite a bit. And it's talked about here in this first chapter of Russia and China Prophecy, which is free at thetrumpet.com. It says Sino-Russian relations have evolved out of common interests. They have a lot in common. And of course, like any friendship or any relationship, people typically need something in common. Two power blocks with a lot in common are seeing that they need to join together. Both share common defense concerns, which include protection against radical Islam in and around Central Asia, challenging Western power in NATO, and the prospect of taking advantage of a weakening U.S. And they're even talking about that in the headlines, as we just read, that they see the U.S. as weak. So who's going to step up and fill that power vacuum? China is now Russia's largest trading partner. In fact, because economic partnerships have proved mutually beneficial, the book says, the prospect of filling other needs is bringing Russia and China even closer together, especially over energy supplies. Of all nations, Russia is uniquely able and willing to provide the secure source of energy needed to power China's rapid industrial and economic growth. Russia has the oil, natural gas, uranium, and nuclear technology to provide power for the 1.3 billion, that's billion with a B, inhabitants of Earth's most populous country. Lots of people over there, of course. I think that's very commonly known. But there's a huge amount of people. They have huge energy consumption needs. And where are they going to get that energy from? Well, Russia, as it says, is uniquely able and willing to provide the secure source of energy needed to power their industry and their economic growth. And, of course, they have so many people, 1.3 billion and growing. There appears to be no alternative for these great powers, it says. Both share common philosophies economically, politically, and militarily, and both have a common enemy in the West. And and again, as it points out, they see the weakening U.S. They see that this is their opportunity to really explode on the world scene. And Russia's really been pushing militarily. They've been expanding into the West, into Europe, and trying to regain some of the territory that they lost to NATO in particular, and the U.S.-backed NATO there when the Balkans dissolved. We have a great Kia David program about that. You can watch about Putin remembers Yugoslavia, and so you can check that out, too, to get some of that history, that backstory. But so you see Russia and China, these two massive power blocks, with a few other nations as well, as the book points out, coming together and making a very formidable force on the world scene, while Europe is still coming together, and you see America and our Western allies weakening very, very much. It says the types of headlines that would have seemed strange 50 or even 15 or even 5 years ago have now become commonplace. And they give a couple of examples from just a few years ago. Time to take the Russia-China axis seriously. That was from The Diplomat, November 4th, 2014. A Sino-Russian alliance to rival Europe, Yahoo News, July 26, 2015. And why Chinese-Russian friendship is here to stay, Foreign Affairs, October 29th, 2014. Of course, this is when, you know, around the time the booklet was being updated and so forth. But you could plug in any headline today almost. And we probably see even more, but it does give you a sense of the fact that the world's paying attention to this alliance in a way that would have been strange, as it says, even 50 or 15 or 5 years ago. But now it's commonplace. It says in May 2014, President Putin and Chinese leader Xi Jinping inked a gargantuan gas supply agreement worth $400 billion. And of course, if you've paid much attention to Russia and their gas program there, when Vladimir Putin, you know, came in a few years ago, and of course, he's kind of been in and out of power there, I guess, probably in more than out, but he stepped aside a little bit for a while. But there was the issue with some of the natural gas companies over there. They were nationalized, and that was big headlines a few years ago. And then, of course, if they had a problem, say, with Ukraine or something, they'd shut the gas supply off. So for them, it is it can be used as a weapon, and definitely something they use to their advantage. But they've made this deal here with China for a gas supply agreement worth $400 billion. And again, as pointed out, China needs energy. They need a lot of it. And where they're going to get it from for their industry and for the people, they're going to get it mainly from Russia. Less than 6 months later, these two nations did it again, signing another tentative deal worth a sum of similar immensity, so around that $400 billion range. These are the two largest business transactions in human history. That's amazing if you think about that. The two largest business transactions in human history. When you're dealing with nations with the population and their economic resources and the natural supplies that are needed for economy and industry, the size of like Russia and China, you do start talking in these terms, the largest, you know, they're going to have the largest military. The Bible talks a lot about that. These are the two largest business transactions in human history. And it is something that the world's paying attention to. I mean, they just have a lot of people. They have a lot of land and they have a lot of natural resources. And they have a lot in common. And so you can see that they're going to continue to come together more and more. And I don't think that's would be hard to imagine, because you can see it happening historically. And more and more as we move forward into time. It says, it is evident that both Russia and Chinese officials are working to form a new alliance and counter American dominance of world affairs. How much more so now than even, say, a year or two ago when this was updated? That's definitely just sped up. That pace is sped up, especially considering the political climate here in the United States of America, where there is so much division that China can see, that Russia can see. And Vladimir Putin, he's pushed his military around a little bit, pushed them out into other regions. What will anybody do about it? Nobody's done anything about it. He hasn't been stopped in any way, other than maybe a few sanctions. But that hasn't. There's been nothing done militarily. Not much anyway. This is, it is evident that they are working again, like we mentioned, to counter American dominance in world affairs. Russian diplomats want to create a multipolar world, and they know that the most expedient way to do so is to cement relations with their closest neighbor to the south. When they agree together, Russia and China, when they work together, when they combine their resources, when they combine their forces, when they combine their military and their economies, that's a power like the world hasn't seen. And that's happening. It's growing that way, and it's going that way. So a lot to consider here and a lot to think about. This is a little quote here from that Financial Times article that we mentioned earlier. It says, for all the pomp surrounding President Xi's speech last week, you remember he gave a 3.5-hour speech that people had to read word by word as he went through it. The Chinese leader's public rhetoric is still relatively modest and cautious, they say. But while President Trump, and again, this is what Financial Times says, but while President Trump is still unmatched when it comes to bombastic rhetoric, the U.S. leader's underlying vision for his country, the United States, now looks small and backward-looking compared with the grandiose ambitions that President Xi has laid out for China. So they don't get into all the exact details of that. And, you know, explain that statement. And I'm sure there's plenty you could look at to come to a conclusion on whether that's accurate or not. I think it is probably accurate, because if you look at this global ambition that China has, and then you see all the infighting in America and trying to hash out health care and trying to hash out tax reforms and trying to figure out if we should stand when the national anthem plays, or we should take a knee, or we should sit, or we should stretch. You know, all these things going back and forth. It's so inward focused. It's just a lot of bickering over things that should be pretty obvious. You know, the right and the wrong of it. It goes on. Obviously, if you look at even just say the social issues, you know, which bathrooms should people use, so forth. Those are the things that the United States is squabbling about right now. And in here, China is laying out their game plan to have global dominance, at least on some level, even though, as Financial Times says here, the talk for now is still relatively modest and cautious in their estimation. And a wise leader, I think, would be that way. They wouldn't want to lay everything out there exactly. But still, you can see Russia growing in China, rather, growing in influence economically in other ways, being bold now and saying they want to come out and really be this stronger power, challenge the West. And then, of course, Russia is right there with them in a lot of ways. Russia's got a massive military. China's got a massive economy. And of course, they both have, China's got its military and Russia has its economy as well. But you can see they both have their strengths that they're bringing to the table. And there's other nations involved as well. This is just talking about mainly here some of what China is up to in particular. And you can find that in this free book, Russia and China in Prophecy. It's free, and it's at thetrumpet.com. Very important book for right now because of all the things that are happening there in that part of the world, and all of it related to the weakening state of America today. Russia and China Prophecy, it's free at thetrumpet.com. We look today a little bit at Chapter 1, The Emerging Asian Superpower. There is a lot more in that chapter to look at, a lot more history, a lot of things that you need to read and to study to really get this whole picture in mind of what is happening there in that part of the world. And so, but these are just some of the highlights today. Russia and China Prophecy, it's free. You can get it at the thetrumpet.com. And tomorrow we'll take a look at the second chapter, which is Russia Frightens Europe and Fulfills Bible Prophecy. A lot happening in Russia as well. We touched on just a little bit of that today. And we'll talk more about that tomorrow. As a reminder, coming up, the Key of David program, also the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. You're going to want to make sure you listen for those. Being Monday, Just the Best Literature, and also Music for Life as well. So lots of great programming here today on KPCG. Archives of everything, of course, available online at kpcg.fm and at thetrumpet.com. That's all that we have for today on Trumpet Radio Live. Thanks for joining me, Dwight Falk. Grant Turchin should be back tomorrow, and we'll look forward to talking to you then. Have a great rest of your day.
You're listening to Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG.